Hello, I'm Andrew Fuller. I'm the chairperson of Generation Next, and in this series of podcasts, I'm delighted to speak with eminent people around the world who are experts in their fields in terms of child well-being, brains, learning, and mental health. And I'm just delighted to talk with someone who I've spoken to a number of times about neuroplasticity and also about issues around young people in relation to one of his new books, Oh Boy. And Oh Boy basically is published by Amber Press and is fresh off the press. And accompanying volume, which we've talked about in a separate podcast, is It's a Girl Thing. So, Michael, welcome.
Thank you, Andrew.
So, often girls are spoken about as being more predisposed towards anxiety and probably fluctuations of emotions and feelings. Whereas often when boys are spoken about, it's in relation to anger and misbehavior. So what's up? Why?
Well, there's a lot of things going on there, not least of which is that there are some differences in how the minds and the brains and minds of boys and girls mature, and that has an impact on how they see and view the world and engage with the world. And so people often simplistically just think about, say, estrogen with girls and testosterone for boys, and therefore you have a storm of stress with boys in terms of aggression. And but it's far more complex than that. But it does have an impact on how boys and girls engage with the world and how boys can be deal with things in a far less nuanced fashion, I suppose.
So let's think for a moment. If we were designing schools from scratch to suit our boys, and we've talked previously that there is a bit of evidence that they're not optimal environments for many boys, what do you think we might do? And let's go through a few specific areas. Let's start with numeracy, because I think it's a major area. How do we encourage boys to become more numerate and more, I suppose, thinking in terms of logic and reasoning around numerical issues?
One of the things that's really interesting with boys is they very much like hands-on activities and problem solving. And so I think probably in terms of numeracy and most areas of study, more doing and less sitting is probably an apt descriptor for getting boys involved in learning, for want of a better term. One of the difficulties for boys is the desire by schools or teachers like to sit still in a particular place for extended periods of time and focus attention on something when they could probably do a much better job focusing that attention if they're actually doing something with what they're being asked to do. And more often than not, I don't think we allow for that much opportunity for boys, and maybe girls for that matter too, but boys certainly need to be doing things a lot more than they need to be sitting and looking at text or potentially memorizing algorithms. They will absorb those sorts of things better by doing things.
So we go out and measure the radius and the circumference of the oval and work out basically what, 25% of that oval would look like and so on.
All of those sorts of things, the practice sort of things. I recall even seeing, children in second grade, year two, boys getting very excited when they began to understand what half a pizza actually means in terms of a fraction. So trying to explain what a fraction is to a boy, it just go in one ear out the other when they're 7 or 8 years old. But if you have a pizza and you cut it in half, say, this is half, this is a quarter, not only are they excited by the fact that they have a sense of fraction, but they've got a meal at hand as well, which, so it's they kill two birds with one stone, so to speak. But all those sort of practical things that you mentioned, going on the oval, measuring things, doing things, that sort of real life context is so very important.
And Michael, you and I are both authors, and so we cry buckets of tears when we hear too many of our young men say, "I don't like reading. Books aren't for me." How do you think we can encourage better our young men to read, to be more involved in literacy?
First and foremost, and we have to ensure that boys have access to good male role models showing those sorts of desires and needs, reading, whether it be books or newspapers. But I think the other thing that can happen in schools, and I don't think schools do this very well, is differentiate the types of materials that boys would like to engage with. I know a lot of boys who like to read, but they don't necessarily like to read long, expansive narrative. They're more inclined to read procedural texts, the how-to manuals or comic books or anything like that. So I think it's a combination of giving boys an opportunity to read the things they like to read as much as possible, providing male role models as much as possible, and destigmatizing reading. Because I think we've probably had a little too, well, I mean, I'm sure the people who created it, the Simpsons would be very happy at their longevity, but we've immortalized Bart Simpson, a young boy, in a cartoon that was only ever designed for adults. Kids watch this and that's their role model, you know, be the class clown. I'm not going to read, I'm not going to do that. We should be showing boys as many opportunities as we can, many examples as we can of real positive role models who we think might send a powerful message to boys about reading can be for enjoyment, it can be for pleasure, it can be for learning, it can be a vast array of things. And I think schools would do well to find those role models, but also ensure that they're not insisting that boys are engaging in reading they don't necessarily want to do.
Yes, even Homer Simpson's often portrayed as a goofball, really, isn't he? And humorously so. So yes, it's fairly negative. So that brings me on to that other area really is, I see increasing numbers of young men who have graduated from school but don't really feel equipped for life. They don't feel like they've got much of a sense of purpose or much of a sense of direction in their world. And I wonder what you think we might do better to help them develop a sense of their own contribution to the world.
Well, I think one of the things that's really important is, and I wrote about this in the book, there's a chapter in the book titled Working with Boys Spiritually. And I don't mean spiritually in a religious sense, although I think there's a place for that depending upon people's upbringing and what they believe. I would argue that we've had a bit of a void about what it might mean to be growing up male and to be masculine. The word masculine has become actually a bit of a pejorative in some contexts. But I don't think we take opportunities to develop rites of passage for boys in Western societies. We don't give them an opportunity to see what it means to excel as a human male. And so perhaps in some all-boys schools or single-sex schools, that may happen. But by and large, we don't provide many opportunities to help boys seek out and identify with excellent males in society. And I would also argue that more often than not, we see too many bad examples of masculinity, because all it takes is someone to do something terrible and it hits the media, and everywhere there's a cry out for all this toxic masculinity is the term that's often used. Yet, you know, for all of the problems that do arise, and then there is some abhorrent masculinity, aberrational masculinity, there's still a lot of good men out there doing some real powerful things that would make for good role models for young men to follow.
I'm wondering whether having a more intensive process of thinking about ethical thinking and moral thinking in scenarios would equip young men to have thought through in advance some of the dilemmas that maybe they're going to face in terms of social situations or life situations.
I think that's a good point, Andrew. And I think probably we don't do enough of that in schools. We don't do, for want of a better term, we talk about emotional literacy, but also social literacy, you know, talking about ethics and morality and what it means to be a good person, what it means to be a good man in the context of the societies that we're in, and looking at the sorts of frameworks and boundaries and things that will help support males and the things that might lead them down a sort of a negative pathway.
Just an interesting thought. And maybe it's a bit ludicrous, but given the different rates of development of young men and young women, schools basically still band kids into classes according to their chronological age, not according to their development. Do you think there's a case for thinking differently about that?
Absolutely. You know, by most measures, girls are anywhere from a year to 2 years ahead of boys on almost all aspects, even oral language. You know, there's no shortage of literature that tells us that a three-year-old girl will have predominantly the same oral language capacity as a five-year-old boy. So on most measures, girls are well and truly ahead of boys. And I think there is an argument could be made where we start to look at education. We put kids in classrooms based on age, not for an educative purpose. It's purely an administrative purpose. That's how schools were designed. But there are situations where schools have multi-age classes where they put kids together, and it's not premised on your chronological age. It's premised on, you know, where you're at developmentally. And I've seen marvelous schools where they have, and when I say multi-age classrooms, We're not talking about a composite class where by virtue of the fact that they didn't have enough girls to fit with the boys, they split. So you've got a year three and four, but classrooms that are actually, 3 year levels together, the 3, 4, 5, 5, 6, 7, and do amazing things. If the teachers are looking to support where the kids are at in terms of all aspects of what they're studying and what they're doing. And I think a real good case could be made, not least of which is now that we have so much literature and actually scientific evidence around the developmental inevitabilities that exist for females and males, you could make a really good case for reconceptualizing how we engage children in school.
So I think a three-year cycle is more characteristic of a Montessori type of education from memory. Yeah, so that's interesting to think about.
And I think Montessori and Steiner schools, they are very developmentally focused, which is probably would make the likes of Jean Piaget very happy in terms of understanding that we're educating the whole child, not based on their age, but where they are at developmentally.
So parenting boys and nurturing them to become good men, what do you think is optimal in terms of that area?
I think probably a couple of things. I think it's important for boys to have positive male role models. And more often than not, that's a father or father figure. But in lieu of a father, it can be a coach, a male teacher. But they really need, and again, there's a fairly broad expanse of research evidence around that boys who have a positive male role model typically do better than those who do not. And so that male role model is very, very important. And I think as boys, jump into adolescence, it's very important for parents to be ensuring that there are sort of boundaries and borders and expectations they have of their sons in terms of what is conducive to a harmonious home, but also in terms of expectations in and outside of the home.
So then it's about thinking, how do you navigate your way through the world in a kind, masculine way? Is that right?
It is. It is. It's about considering what does it mean to be kind? What does it mean to be respectful? What does it mean to be altruistic, to help others when they need help? And I think we've, as a society, lost track of that. And in the sense that I don't think we actually instruct it. And I don't think there's any reason why we shouldn't. It might sound a little bit anachronistic, but character development in terms of schooling should be part and parcel with any program that is for raising fine young men.
If I'm right, the ancient Greeks would talk about femininity or the feminine as being Sophia, wisdom, whereas masculinity, the masculine was considered part of kindness, which is something that seems to have disappeared from modern thinking. And yet really all of us know of the power, I think, of kind men in our world and what difference they can make. I don't know how we highlight that more in our world. Do you have any thoughts about that?
I think it's about being proactive and looking for examples of kind men. Too often we find boys find role models who probably are not the pinnacle of humanity, whether they be, I can't tell you the number of times I've seen sporting figures being held up as the high note of masculinity and maleness, only to see that tremendous downfall when they've done something horrendous, and might be a bit hyperbolic there. But I also think that schools have a really great opportunity. I've seen schools that have done some really fantastic things where young boys are paired with older boys and older boys take on that mentorship model. And I think whenever we can do something like that, and for older boys, maybe it means they're mentored by older male teachers or anyone else. But I do think we probably would do well to our boys to find opportunities to give them a framework, to give them some kind of, boys tend to operate really well if they know what the end goal is, if they can see that end goal and say, that's where I want to be. We have to show them what that might look like.
So in your book, Oh Boy, which I really loved reading, you talk about Corey and Hugh. I wonder if you'd like just to share that with the readers, with the thinkers.
Yeah, look, to me, that's perfectly encapsulates kind of what we're talking about. I, more often than not, when I'm working with parents and teachers alike, I will show two pictures of individuals. And one, and I'll fill that in later, they often have no idea who I'm showing, even though I'll show that person standing there of their on their own. And then standing next to Hugh Jackman, of course, most people recognize Wolverine in a heartbeat, but they still have no idea who the other young man is. And then I show them a photograph of Corey, and your listeners might not, but if you think back, it wasn't all that long ago in Melbourne, if I'm not mistaken, Corey, a young man of 15 or 16, decided to have a bit of a soiree at home. It made social media, and it, let's just say, it turned out rather pear-shaped for the neighbors and everyone in life. But Corey was raised to infamy, and he was all over the news. And if I'm not mistaken, he was actually invited guest on Big Brother at the time, whatever rendition of Big Brother was showing at that time. And so here's a young man who had a party. It went pear-shaped, and he was held up almost like Bart Simpson. Here he is. Here is the high note of humanity, of male masculinity. And very few people know Hugh Evans, you know, the young man who I spoke of earlier, who, you know, when Hugh was in high school, he went off to India. He was involved in lots of Phil's sort of opportunities to improve humanity through, and he was the Young Australian of the Year. He won all of these awards for all of these great things he's done for humankind. And yet very few people know who he is. And the point being is that we tend to focus on the negative. We have a negativity bias. We look at these buffoons and we put them up and they make all the media. We don't spend enough time celebrating the 10,000 males out there who aren't Corys, who are doing amazing things. And I think we should spend far more time discussing the positive things that young men are doing and not the silly things that get them on the 6 o'clock news.
Thank you for writing this book. I think it's a much needed synthesis of a whole lot of research and thinking and obviously your own sort of expertise and experiences. I think you have been an educator in 4 continents, was it 4?
Yes.
Yeah, and clearly at such a young age, it's a remarkable achievement. So congratulations, Michael. Well,
thank you for that compliment, although I don't think my body feels so young anymore. I often go to sleep and wake up injured.
Thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. If you would like to follow up in further detail, please listen in to some of the other podcasts that we have made, which are available through the Generation Next website. There are also a series of books from Generation Next in terms of nurturing young minds, covering a series of issues to do with young people. And also in my own book, Tricky Behaviors and Your Best Life at Any Age, which are both available either on Amazon or through Bad Apple Press. Thank you so much, and I hope to connect with you again soon. Thank you.